Here is the planet's ultimate game. The final of the 21st Football World Cup. Flicked in by Griezmann and flicked on! And France take the lead in the World Cup final!
Welcome to the third episode of the Arab News World Cup podcast, where we are covering all things Qatar 22 from now till the big kickoff on November the 20th and beyond. Today's guest is a bona fide superstar, former international who played and scored at the World Cup. But before we introduce him, a warm welcome, as always, to Arab News sports editor Ali Khalid. How are you?
Hi, Pete. How are you doing?
Very well. Yourself?
I'm very well. Yeah, just... I think it's getting very close now. I know we said that last week, but I think
it's getting closer.
It's getting it's a week closer, but no. I mean, I know we kind of keep an eye on the Arab teams, the Asian teams. They're all starting to name their squads. I think Saudi Arabia are camping here in the Emirates in Abu Dhabi. They just played against Honduras, drew. Again, so that's like four draws and one win out of the last five. It's Herb Renard is an amazing and an excellent manager. I think he's got them solid. You know, they're very hard to beat and they play very good football, but they're having problems scoring goals. You know, they don't really have the cutting edge up front quite yet. So that will be a bit of a concern to Saudi Arabia. But, you know, I think they've got a lot of players coming back from injuries as well. So he'll be quite pleased overall. Also, we're keeping an eye on, Morocco. We've run stories on their goalkeeper, you know, Yassine Bono, who's obviously was last year's best goalkeeper in the Spanish league as well, you know. So, we'll be discussing all these stories in the coming weeks as well. But just under 3 weeks away now.
Just under. And also lots of local interest, as you said, for us to look at, not just Saudi Arabia, but we've got the host Qatar in there, Algeria, as well as Morocco. Lots of exciting football. But on this episode, we'll be looking at, and hopefully some of our Arab nations could be wild cards for it. But we're going to be looking at the favourites for the World Cup, including reigning champions France, Brazil, Argentina, and the team that our guest played for and scored for in the 98 World Cup, England's Darren Anderton. Welcome to the show. How are you, mate?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being our guest. And what a guest, by the way, with World Cup pedigree. Before we get into it, tell us a little bit about what you've been up to recently. You're in stateside, aren't you?
Yeah, we are. Although we just had nearly 3 months back in London, which was fun. Took little Jack back for his first trip over the pond, which was amazing. A good time to be in and around London, in Richmond there in July and August. And then, weather changed a little bit in September, so we came back in October.
Wise move.
Right.
Absolutely. Listen, someone you just mentioned before we came on air, actually, you played for Terry Venables in that fantastic Euro 96 England team, Glenn Hoddle, France 98. A great era, but tell us about being part of that team, and in particular, your World Cup experience in 98.
I mean, it was a great time to be part of the England team. I think after Euro 96, there was obviously so much excitement about the team. Youngsters coming through, you know, Scholesy, Becks, Michael Owen, Sol Campbell, top draw. And, with what was already within that squad and the experience that it had from Euro 96, it was always going to be a great opportunity. Unfortunately, things didn't work out. We ended up going through on the, wrong side of the draw, losing on penalties again. But, to be part of, some classic games, some, great performances, playing with great players, exciting times with, Glenn Hoddle, the way he had the team playing. It was, it was a dream come true. I mean, I was the kid who running around the back garden, pretending I was playing for England in a World Cup, and to have that, to fulfill that dream was something that I'd always wished for.
Darren, tell us about the goal against Colombia. I mean, I do remember that. I think you'd lost the previous game to Romania. Late on, Owen had scored to equalise, but then you lost that game. But then I do remember the Colombia game was a very exciting game to watch. Beckham scored that great goal. But tell us about your goal and how it felt like to score in a World Cup final.
That was great, obviously. To be in a World Cup. We'd lost the previous game, so there was was a lot of pressure on it. And I think that we just had to not get beat by Colombia in order to go through to the next round. But of course, we wanted to go through top as well, so it was important to try and win the game. The team played with such a freedom. Bex had not played in the first two, come on in the second. So now he had come in and replaced David Batty. So it's a little bit more of an attacking feel to it. Michael Owen had come off the bench, as you said, against Romania, replaced Teddy Sheringham in the starting lineup, which actually surprised probably a few people within the squad, players, because we all, as a footballer, you appreciate everything that Teddy does, but Michael had literally come on and, lit the tournament up in those games. And we all know what he did in the next game against Argentina. So for me, it was just it was an incredible atmosphere. I even had friends flying in from America to watch the game. All my family were there. And then to get that opportunity where, it's everything you practice. When I was at Portsmouth as a kid with Alan Ball, everything is about your first touch. Michael Owen went down the right wing. I came inside. His cross was headed out straight to me. I was quite close to it. My touch was perfect. Got it down. Was able to hit it on the volley and get a good connection on it. And to see it sail into the top corner was a feeling that I'll never forget. And of course, it set us on to a great result onto the knockout stages. Bex had come in, he scored the second goal as well. So before the tournament, there was talk about, could we both play in the same team? And was I playing in front of him? But I feel like Glenn always had it within his thought process that he wanted us both to play. We both were wide players, but actually we both wanted to play centrally. And so he had this thing that we could intertwine and it would work really well. And so for me, obviously, personally, it was great that that had happened. And, we both had a bit of freedom to just go and play and at a World Cup, which is just a dream come true. And then to both be on the score sheet, the media, of course, are always wanting to cause, little rifts within the camp or a storm as such, which they certainly did with Bex not playing. So for us both to play and both to score goals and both play well was a dream come true.
It's brilliant, Ali. He says there, Darren says, every schoolboy's dream. I think every schoolboy's done that in their own backyard. I know I have. You imagine it. But to actually go out and do it is absolutely incredible. Ali, I'll come to you. We'll start our discussion on favourites with you. Let's start. It's a name on everyone's lips, isn't it? And I'm going to say champions France.
Yes. I think, when you look at the favourites, they have to be top of the list, not just because they're champions. I think they're actually, I know they've had some inconsistent results. They didn't play very well in the Nations League, but that squad, you look at the squad, and if they get it anywhere near a full strength squad, they're going to be very, very hard to beat. At the back, they've got Varane. I know he's injured, but, it looks like he might be able to come back. Upamecano of Bayern Munich, Mendy of Real Madrid, Konate, Thiago Silva, William Saliba. That's just the defenders, up front, they've got Giroud and Martial. They've got Benzema. They've got, who's just become, Ballon d'Or winner, Griezmann, and of course Mbappe. Other teams can only dream of this sort of strength and depth. They've got Kingsley Coman, Nkunku of RB Leipzig, and in midfield, they've got the two young Real Madrid players, Camavinga and Tchouaméni. I know Pogba's injured and he's not going to make it. But you look at that squad, and when it comes to they've had inconsistent results, but when it comes to the real thing, it's really hard to see how anyone beating them. And I keep looking back, at that defense, and then I don't think they're going to concede much, And defenses will win you tournaments.
Absolutely, Darren. Do you still see France as the team to beat?
Yeah, I do. I think I totally agree with that. You just go through the list of those names. Yes, no Pogba, no Kante, but the young boys at Madrid. I mean, And they've done it. They know what it's all about, tournament football. And, they've got a manager who's done it. And, they're not going to get over. They're not going to get carried away with any games within the tournament. If they get, draw a game, or if they, if they win a game, comfortably, that, they're just going to, they're a machine. They've got players who have been there, seen it and done it with real quality, all playing for top clubs all over Europe, playing in big games all the time. So they are the team to beat. There's no doubt about it. Of course, we all know how difficult it is to defend the World Cup. And it will be very difficult because there's, you know, we can go down the list. There's so many teams that could do it. I see them as being the favourites. I think England have got a chance, but, you know, when you look at France, I think they're a different animal. They've been there, seen it and done it.
Interesting. For me, I look at it and I agree with both of you. I just wonder, you know, do they gel at a World Cup? So much talent in there, but can they come together as a team? Which is a very...
Happened before, didn't it? When they were holders, when they went and they got lost, you know, went out in the first round. So that's a really good point. You know, sometimes, you know, they got great individuals, but I think this team are probably more of a team. And I don't see them slipping up like they did when they were holders before.
Yeah, I agree, Darren. And I think also that last year in the Euros last year, you know, they were kind of playing within themselves. They were leading that one match against Switzerland and looked quite comfortable to go through.
Yeah.
And they threw it away. They missed the penalty as well. And I think precisely maybe because of, you know, the slip last year, they'll be like a little bit more on their game, you know. So, yeah, I don't see them slipping up. You know, I mean, like, even if they don't win it, I just, you know, you have to see
them.
They won't be far away, yeah.
Just me playing devil's advocate, that's all, for all our French listeners. I'm not, you know, I'm not casting any doubt, just asking the question. Ali, back up to you with Brazil. Always seem to be one of the favourites when the World Cup comes around. It is World Cup, I think, of Brazil. Even on the occasions when their squad has not warranted that tag, they are a World Cup team, aren't they? That's not the case this time. This is a formidable group of Brazilians, right?
They are. I mean, I know they lost the South American Championship last year, but they are, you know, just such a strong squad. Again, you know, maybe not quite as strong as France, but not too far off either, you know. And the thing is, their manager, Tite, has given them an identity, you know, over the last few years. You know, there was a time when, you know, Brazil just, you know, obviously when they held the World Cup in 2014, it ended up being a disaster, you know, but like, you know, with the 7-1 loss to Germany, and, you know, they didn't seem, you know, maybe they didn't have quite the identity. They want to be the old, you know, like flamboyant team, or do they want to be more defensive and a little bit more European in their outlook? Tite's given them a real, real good identity. You know, they've got solid centre backs. They're back, Thiago Silva from Chelsea. You know, obviously, you know, this will be his last World Cup, but he's great. You know, he's up there. You know, and you know, up front they've got Gabriel Jesus. They've got Richarlison, they've got Neymar, they've got Firmino. It's a very, very strong attack. And in the middle, of course, you've got your man Bruno Guimarães, who I really believe is going to be one of the stars of the tournament. You know, I think, you know, we've seen what he's done with Newcastle this season. So, I mean, and also, I mean, Rafinha, we were lucky
Love
enough
him,
to have
by
a chat
the way.
With
great player.
Rafinha. Great player, you know, like at Barcelona. You know, he's been in and out of the Barcelona team. But I remember speaking to, I was lucky enough to chat to Kaká earlier in the year during a World Cup event. And he specifically mentioned Guimarães and Rafinha. He said, we're going to keep an eye on Rafinha. And yeah, I mean, so a lot of skill in there. But like, they do play like as a team. And of course, not forgetting they have two great goalkeepers in Alisson and Ederson. So again, just a very, very strong squad. They seem to have two players for every position. They won't be far off, you know. Like I said, I think, that, you know, in terms of squad strength, second only to France.
I have to say as well, the Brazilian manager was in Newcastle at the weekend watching his two midfielders. He was watching Bruno, but he was also watching Joe Linton. Now, I have to say, Darren, we had Lindsay Hipgrave on our sister podcast talking all things Newcastle. And I take my hat off to her at the weekend. She was with Joe Cole and Rio Ferdinand, and they were talking about the greatest players to grace the midfield in Premier League history. So the likes of Gerrard and Lampard were mentioned. Vieira was in there. And Lindsay threw in a Joe Linton. He scored again at the weekend, and the Brazil manager was there. And it leads me to say that the top Brazilians, they've always played in Spain, Italy and France, but there seems to be more and more of them playing in the Premier League. Do you think that's had an influence on the way the team is gelled now?
I would think so. And I think the Premier League is the toughest league in the world to play in. So and we all know what Brazil are all about and the flair and the quality they have. And, you know, they go and play in Spain and maybe in those sort of places, a little bit, it's more technical and it encouraged more of that. It's not as blood and thunder, which we all love about the Premier League. So the fact that those players now come and play, you know, it toughens them up. It must do. And, you know, you only have to look at Richarlison, the way that, you know, he winds up, you know, opposing fans, defenders, you know, there's nothing wrong with that within your team. When you've got someone who is, you know, he's all over the place. I believe that makes them more of a team. And now, as Ali just said earlier, a team ethic wins the World Cup these days, opposed to, you know, like Maradona winning it back in, you know, 86 with that, you know, almost single-handedly, you know, with that genius. Now, I'm really interested to see what happens at this World Cup because of the timing of it. A World Cup normally comes at the end of the season and players have all played long, hard seasons. Sometimes those players that you want to light it up don't because maybe they're tired, maybe there's fatigue. And this time, I feel like players around this time, that's when you're really hitting peak fitness, you know, within a season. So I'm really, you know, it's really strange. Of course it is. And, you know, it's a shame that, you know, there's a stop in the Premier League. But for the World Cup itself, it really could make for an entertaining World Cup where all the top players in the world go out and perform what like you want them to.
Absolutely. I hadn't thought of it like that as well. Players hitting peak, it's a really, really good point. Yeah. Ali, next up's a team I know you've got a soft spot for, a very soft spot indeed, Argentina.
Yes, Pete. I'm a big fan of Argentina. The 86 World Cup, you know, I was just the right age for it. I was a teenager watching the 86 World Cup. So, you know, I've got like very, very fond memories of that and of Diego Maradona, one of, you know, I was going to say one of my heroes, you know, probably a hero to many people. I know this is probably not one for Brazil fans or not one for England fans even, but, you know, I do like Argentina. I absolutely adore Lionel Messi. I do think he's the greatest player of all time, you know, probably closest we've had to, you know, or him and Maradona being the two best players of all time. And I think it would be fantastic if I would love to see Lionel Messi get the World Cup. You know, I would love to see him hold our World Cup at the end of just, it would just, you know, crown a fantastic career. It would put all those discussions to bed, you know, which I don't think should be any debates about them. You know, of course, everyone's entitled to their own opinion and all that, but people like sort of put him down a little bit as in like, yeah, you've never won the World Cup and all that, but not many people have, you know, Cruyff didn't, you know, and you know, and he was one of the best players, you know, he's certainly the best player at his time, you know, so, and Zico didn't for Brazil as well in 82. So, but it would be great to see Lionel Messi. They are the South American champions. You know, I think finally he got that international trophy. I do think, I don't want to say it was a hollow triumph, but, you know, obviously it was celebrated a lot because it was him. But, you know, it was, you know, behind closed doors, you know, considerably behind closed doors. So I think, I think this would be fantastic. And they do have a strong team, you know. Again, they really play as a unit. They don't have maybe some of the star power that they had in the past, but they, you know, they have people like Dybala up front and obviously Messi and Lautaro Martinez of Inter Milan. So they've got good players. Di Maria, again, you know, always seems to perform well at the World Cup. So, you know, I don't think, you know, if you ask people now, like to name like too many Brazilian players, you know, they'll jump at you like in the days of Tevez, you know, and maybe some of the older players, you know, 10 years ago, 10 or 12 years ago. But they do play like they really play as a team, and they play as a team for Maradona. And, you know, a few years back, it was a case of just give Leo the ball and hope for the best. But now, like, they're refined, you know, and Scaloni has done a really good job with them.
Darren, you played against Argentina in one of the most famous matches of all time. As South American champions, how do you see their chances in Qatar?
They've got a chance, haven't they? And, you know, for that reason, that man Messi, you've always got a chance if you can get him the ball in the right areas. Yes, he's aging, still doing the business, though. I mean, the goals he scored last week, PSG, were fantastic. I agree. I mean, I'm scared being an Englishman. We're not too keen on Argentina doing too well after Maradona. And after, as you've said, I got knocked out of the World Cup and then they're jumping on the bus and having a party while we're all just moping around. So things that, you know, you remember for sure. So Messi, I would love to see really well. There's no doubt about that, because I think in my lifetime, you know, Maradona and Messi are the two players that are just genius, really. So the fact that people try and put that stigma against him that he hasn't won the World Cup means that he's not the greatest of all time, I don't agree with, because for many reasons. But they definitely have a chance. They definitely are a solid team. They've won the tournament, the South American tournament, so that will give them a huge belief that they can go and win a tournament again. So they have to be up there. I do think that, as I say before, France and Brazil probably are the ones that you look at first. And for me, you can never count out a team like, you know, the Germans in any tournament. But then Argentina could well be right up there if they can get off to a nice start and, you know, get Messi flying. Then why not? Why can't they win it?
Darren, just mentioning that game you played in 98, you know, I mean, what are you, I think it's probably too general of a question to say what are your memories of it and all that, but I mean, do you think back to it and think, you know, if the sending off hadn't happened, if you'd gone through, I mean, even with the sending off, all that time you played, England played so well, you know, and, you know, maybe, if, you know, there wasn't that penalty complex that England had, you know, like, had you gone through, right. You know, England would have had a really good chance of winning that World Cup, don't you think?
I think so. I think, you know, the problem is that we went through on the wrong side of the draw. So we played against Argentina. And then if we got through, I think we'd have played against Holland. Then if we got through that, we'd have played Brazil. So, it would have been a tough route anyway. But the reality of it was that, you know, we went through second. The penalty thing that, you know, obviously people are always talking about. There were so many things within that game that I remember. I remember turning up at the stadium literally an hour and a half, 2 hours before. And every game before that, obviously, you know, for the English, it was easy to go to Marseille. It was easy to go to the other two games. And it was like a home game. I could not believe how many Argentinas were there and the firecrackers going off, and it was, you know, going on the pitch before for your warm-up. It was so hostile, probably one of the most hostile crowds I'd played in front of, but that also created an incredible atmosphere between the English fans and the Argentinians. They scored it after 5 minutes. It's like, oh my Lord, here we go. And then I think for the next 40 minutes, probably was the best football I'd been part of in any team. We literally ripped them to shreds. Yeah, Michael ripped, yeah, they couldn't live with him. We got back in the game with 2-1 up. Then we had a goal disallowed to go 3-1 up. Scholes, he had a chance. You know, we could have been 3 or 4 up. And then we went in at half time, conceding right on half time with what was a great free kick for them, but one that, you know, you always think, oh my God, how have we allowed that to happen? But it happens every week. And so we went in at 2-2, deflated, to be honest, after playing so well. But there was a real belief, you know, Glenn settled everyone down and said, no, just go and do that again, you know, and you'll be happy. Then 5 minutes later, then Bex gets sent off. And it's like, oh my Lord, what's happened here? I didn't, you know, I was near the incident, didn't get to see it. And of course, you know, I've seen it a million times since. And of course, it should never have been a sending off. It was a terrible decision. We go on, Sol scores a goal from a header, the goal that probably shouldn't have been disallowed. And then we lose on penalties. So as you can see, it winds me up a little bit. But as a game, it was one of the best games of football I'd ever been part of. It had absolutely everything apart from the right result for us.
Okay, let's move swiftly on to the question that we brought an English legend on for. How do you see England's chances, Darren?
They've got a good chance, haven't they? And I think the way they performed at the Euros should give them a real belief. My worry is the way we've been playing recently. You know, players that are, were certainties to play in the team aren't playing in their, you know, for their club teams. You know, I actually went to the England-Germany game, and I have to say, after an hour and, you know, 2-0 down, I'm thinking, oh my, this is pretty bad. It was there was zero confidence within the team. You could see it. The Germans were very comfortable. Made a substitution. You know, Mount and Saka came on, and and changed the game and just had a, you know, played with the, you know, with a freedom that the players that had started the game hadn't, which shows you that there are so many gifted and talented players within the squad that if they can go out and play with some confidence and get that confidence back that they should have, then they're going to have a real chance. I do worry about, you know, who's going to play at the back and how are we going to be. I think that because of that, possibly we'll be a little bit negative in the way we play and maybe play two central midfielders or a little bit more defensive to protect the back three, four or five or whatever it is. So I think we got to the final with not being at our best of the Euros. So it shows that we are more than capable of doing it. And of course, we all want to watch our top players go out and play at their best ability, but sometimes that has to, you know, that gets taken away for the sake of the team and being a little bit more difficult to beat, which I think Gareth will go down that route because it served them so well in the Euros.
Absolutely. Ali, thoughts on England from you?
Yeah, I mean, I think England are fourth favourites after the first three teams that we discussed. Quite rightly, I think that's about, you know, sums it up, you know. The team that beat them in Euros, Italy, are not there. You know, the European champions, they're not there. So that makes sense that England are there, you know, as the fourth favourites. I worry slightly for England because I think there was a feeling after the Euros that, you know, they'd been to the semi-finals of the World Cup last time out. Then they got to the final of the Euros. You know, it's a natural progression. They'll, you know, they'll just improve. And if they keep that trajectory, you know, why not the World Cup? Obviously, it's not as easy as that. And more worrying for me is that I don't see them that as a team. They've progressed too much over the last year since the Euros. You know, they don't seem to have improved. As Darren mentioned, there's like some of those games were quite worrying. That like that game against Germany, they didn't perform too well in the Nations Cup. That's fine. You know, I mean, neither did France, but. And you can like dismiss that and think, you know, they'll be all right. Yeah, it's true, you know. But they did seem to be like, I don't know, like a bit of stagnation in the team, you know. I mean, I think where the defense is a worry. I think where England are quite lucky in that they've got an incredible striker in Harry Kane, you know. He's brilliant, you know. He's proven himself as a tournament player as well, you know. Always gets the goals. And they've got like some really, really skillful players. I think in Saka, who's fantastic, you know, Mason Mount's very good, you know. I personally think Phil Foden is probably England's best player, an absolute gem of a player, you know. Like himself, someone like Pep. But yeah, Pedri for Spain, you know, him and Pedri for Spain, I think they could be like two of the players of the tournament if they're given the opportunities and all that. I think Phil Foden could, you know, if unleashed properly, like those players could take England to a higher level. I haven't seen that happen yet, you know, but maybe it'll happen in the tournament. You know, again, with Saka, Phil Foden, don't forget, we haven't even mentioned Grealish yet, you know. But like, you know, I think Phil Foden is an absolute gem, you know, with himself, Saka and Kane. Anything's possible, you know. I know Calvin Phillips, unfortunately, is injured. But again, Declan Rice in the centre, you know, that, you know, a lot will go through him. And he's been fantastic this season. So the defence is a slight worry for me. The goalkeeping situation, you know, Pickford seems to be, you know, even when he struggles a little bit, sometimes for everything, seems to be very good for England. I do think Nick Pope should be number one. But I think with those forward players, England will have a chance, you know, but I think being fourth favourites is just about right.
Okay, listen, we had so many messages from all over the world, and I don't want to be the one that's, you know, accused of just talking about the favourites. So just to give everyone a fair crack with the whip, Darren, you did mention Germany, never discount them. Are there anyone else in there that you can see challenging, perhaps, mate, a Holland or Portugal?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, of course, you know, Spain are always, you know, they've got so much quality within their team usually. Belgium obviously got De Bruyne and so many gifted players that we watch in the Premier League, an aging squad, you'd have to say, you know, a bit of a transition, but all teams with an opportunity to go and win it for sure. I think the ones we spoke about, I think we spoke about that them rightly because they've earned that, the right to be favourites and you, that's who you would look at, but I would definitely not be surprised with Germany. I mean, as I said, you know, I went and watched them play against, you know, England last month. That, you know, scored three goals and at will. They looked very, good in moments. And also, they looked like they everything went crashing. England scored 3 goals in 10 minutes against them, which is very un-German-like. So that obviously is a problem. They're not, when you look at the players, it's not the German squads of before, no doubt about it, but they're always there or thereabouts.
They're also going to say if they're always there, aren't they?
They are, unfortunately. And, you know, from a kid watching, you know, 90 and losing our powers, Euro 96, you know, we were a better team than them in Euro 96, for sure. But, we, you know, they beat us.
Unbelievable. And for me as well, my first time in away from Newcastle in 98, I lived in London. So I watched the World Cup. I watched 98, I watched you boys from London as well.
Oh, wow.
So it was and it was a special World Cup for me. Being in London, but okay, Ali. Anyone else from your side that you think is likely to challenge that we haven't covered?
I think Darren got it right. You know, Belgium is probably the closest one of the rest. But Belgium and Spain, I would say. I think Germany again. You know, they had a bad last World Cup and a very bad Euros as well. But they are again. You know, what you call is a tournament team. You know, it's a bit of a cliche. It's a bit of a cliche, but for a reason. You know, when you least expect it. I mean, Darren, if you remember in Euro 2000, they were very, very poor, very, very poor. Yeah. England beat them when, and that wasn't a great England team either, as well, or at least in that tournament. And yet they came back 2 years later and they got to the final. You know, so you can you know that with Germany, Belgium, I feel. You know, I hope this doesn't come back to bite me, but I feel like, you know, they've had this golden generation, and I feel like they've had their opportunities. You know, the last few Euros, last few World Cups, they've been there, thereabouts, and they could have won it. You know, like there weren't that many teams that were much better than them. I think they might miss out. They'll just miss out them. But that's a good. I think Belgium's a good shout. Spain, I really like a lot. I've always liked Spain. I thought they were quite underrated last year in the Euros. Pedri and Gavi are two superb young players. You know, they don't really have too much cutting edge up front, like as an out and out striker, but they never seem to do, you know, like, you know, probably since the days of David Villa and Fernando Torres. They've got Ferran Torres this time, but always not as good. But I think Spain will be great. You know, probably the best of the rest will be Belgium and then Spain and Germany. Yeah.
Okay. Got to put you on the spot then, Darren. Who wins it?
Yeah.
you knew that was coming.
I got a feeling. For Brazil. I really do. I think. Yep. I think it's so difficult to defend the title. I am edging towards Brazil. I think it changes daily. But that's asking me that question now. We've all spoke about it all, put it all together. You'd have to go. Yeah, I think Brazil are the ones could do the lot.
Brilliant. Been absolutely fantastic chat with Darren Anderson. But Ali, last word from you. And I'm going to ask you the same thing as well. Who wins it for you, AK?
Okay, so the head says France, but I'm going to go with the heart. So I'm going to go with Argentina.
Okay.
Oh, no. Yeah. I'm out of here.
It's gone.
It's a good time to end this. You know?
I'm just glad I left that bit to last. We didn't open up with that.
it's more my just sheer admiration and love for Lionel Messi. Like I said, it's probably like far more in hope than expectation. But yeah, I mean, I do think France, the best team, probably will win it. But I'm gonna go for Argentina just for a change.
Okay, absolutely fantastic episode, by the way. All that remains for me to do is thank our guest today, Darren. It's been absolutely fantastic to see you, and
you can see you again.
Really, really enjoyed that. Ali, great as always. We'll be back for episode 4 on our World Cup podcast with Arab News. See you next week.